Our next case this morning is case number 11-2338, Swanson versus the United States. Mr. Theis.
May it please the court, Bill Theis on behalf of David Swanson. The district court has acknowledged in the opinion that's under review that it erred in imposing this four-level enhancement for being an organizer. And the government, I think, has implicitly conceded that if the prior attorney did not preserve this error, that would be ineffective assistance of counsel. So that brings us to the question as to whether prior counsel preserved the error. The record facts are relatively straightforward. Prior counsel filed a two-sentence written objection to this enhancement. When you take a look at it, besides being very short, it's really not very informative. And then when the attorney goes to the hearing and the judge asks him about the four-level enhancement, whether that's there, he says yes. And
counsel, yes. Wasn't he really responding to the question of whether or not the 1998 version of the guidelines contained an enhancement for organizer leader? Wasn't that entire exchange directed to the misstatement of the AUSA, who had suggested that there was no organizer leader enhancement in that version of the guidelines?
I think not. That, of course, was his explanation. But importantly enough, the district judge, in dealing with this, did not accept that explanation. So the district judge said that at the time she thought he waived the objection, and then 8 years later she thought he was talking about a different enhancement for two levels. So it's true he said that, but the government would have to establish that the judge's finding
was... That's not all he said, though. Even after making the statement that you contend is a waiver of the written objection, he goes on to argue that the offense level, as it should have been calculated under the 98 guidelines, was 22. You don't get to 22. I think my math is right. You don't get to 22 with the four-level enhancement for organizer. I think he maintains that objection. There's just a miscommunication going on between the district judge and defense counsel.
I think not, Your Honor, because the way he got to 22, if you go back to his written objections, is he had a completely different analysis of the amount of loss, and it was his position that the government had established no amount of loss, and if you take out the loss in enhancement, then you're way down there. But I guess I'm not convincing you, but
No, you're not, and I'm surprised you're even making the argument, not having argued it on the initial appeal.
I had no way to argue it on the initial appeal.
You have a written objection, and you have his argument at the transcript. At worst, it would be plain error that he wasn't assertive enough in his objection.
Well, let's talk about...
We hear those arguments all the time.
But let's talk about plain error, Your Honor. Whether you call it waiver or forfeiture, on the first appeal, our hands were tied. There was no way...
But you didn't even make the argument, and we found that in the second appeal, that it was waived by not having been brought on the first appeal.
You found that it was waived by not being brought on the first appeal, but the reason it was not brought on the first appeal was that prior counsel had put us in this untenable position where, whether you call it waiver or forfeiture, we would not have a successful objection. Prior counsel made no record.
If it was forfeiture, why wouldn't that have been an adequate basis for you to argue plain error if the error is so substantial?
Because with a forfeiture analysis, we would have to show that there was not only an error, but that it was plain or obvious. And here we have a record where, because the prior counsel made no argument on the facts or the law, the district judge just slapped on this four-level enhancement, never explained who the five people would be, never explained the legal standard that was used in doing that. And mind
you,
the district...
You're harshly critical of the written objection, but what more was there to say about it than was written by initial sentencing counsel? It doesn't apply.
What he should have done, especially in light of his statement to the judge, which she herself at the time took as a waiver, he should have said, you know, we've got this objection to the four-level enhancement. The government's got to show five culpable people. The government has not shown five culpable people. That would have generated a discussion, much like the discussion that occurred at the resentencing. And having done all that, this court would have had a full record on which to decide whether or not there was an error, and none of that happened.
Well, explain to me this. How did initial sentencing counsel get to level 22 as the total offense level or adjusted offense level by conceding or including a four-level enhancement for being an organizer or leader? How do you get there?
I'm not sure.
The answer is it's a rhetorical question. You don't get there unless the four level is excluded. It maintains the argument that he made in writing.
You know, if I haven't gone back and tried to go over his objections to see how he got to 22.
Before you accuse a counsel of ineffective assistance, I think you ought to do that.
But the point is, Your Honor, it is not proper lawyering to hit the judge with these very cryptic and terse written comments and then agree with the judge that a four-level enhancement...
Well, it's a long sentencing, and there are a lot of subjects being covered. If he's got a written objection to it...
I understand...
What more does he need?
I understand what you're saying. Well, what he should have done, and this is a very reasonable approach, is given that he had made this objection, and given that he said something that sounds very much like he's waiving it, have said to the judge, you know, I've got a specific objection to four levels based on an organizer, and here's how I'm challenging the government's position.
This is the office of 2255 to go back 8 years or so and say, gosh, it would have been better if he had said it this way.
You know, there's one key finding of fact that the district court made that I think is very important to this appeal. She says in the opinion that's under review that at the time of the original sentencing, she thought prior counsel had waived the objection. It doesn't get any better than that. And so, you know, we can pick...
So there a mistake was made. There was a miscommunication.
And
how does that become ineffective assistance of counsel?
Because with that mistake, the district judge, without any further ado, added on these four levels, which added years to the defendant's prison sentence. That is the mistake, and that's why it makes it different.
But given that she has since withdrawn that enhancement, correct, and sentenced based on her withdrawal of the organizer-leader enhancement, where's the prejudice?
Oh, she resentenced to a lower sentence, but it wasn't based on withdrawing the four levels. When she...
It wasn't?
It was not. It was based on the fact that she had used the wrong version of the guidelines, which the government conceded. We went back for resentencing. The judge used the correct book, as the government now conceded and as this court directed. There was further dispute about the four levels. This time, there was a real dispute. She heard the government and said that although she couldn't find there were five other participants, she was still going to award the enhancement. So the sentence that we're asking to have treated here today is very much a product of that four-level enhancement, which significantly the district judge has now said, I made a mistake. I was wrong. If this mistake had been called to my attention, I wouldn't have given this enhancement.
But would have given the same sentence.
She didn't really say that. She said, you know, when I gave that 151-month sentence, I thought it was reasonable. And that, of course, is part of the Booker analysis. But it is not the same thing to say when the guidelines are whatever to 151 and I give a 151 sentence, that's reasonable. That's not the same as saying when the guidelines are 79 to 97, that's reasonable. Because now that we know the correct guidelines calculation, in order to give him a sentence of 151 months, she would have to vary upwards by approximately 50%. And this court has got a strong body of case law indicating that when the judge does something like that, the judge has to indicate why this big, big variance is not creating unwarranted disparity. I see my time is up, so I'll sit down for
thank you, counsel.
For now.
Mr. Corris.
May it please the court, I'm Gerald Corias. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Southern District of Indiana. If I could, I would like to address the prejudice issue first with respect to the sentence that Judge Barker imposed in 2005. When Judge Barker imposed a sentence in 2005, this is the re-sentencing hearing. She opens up and says, this is going to be a Booker sentencing. I understand Booker. I understand what the Supreme Court is saying. And I would direct your attention to the supplemental appendix at page 204 on this. She states, and I quote her, the ultimate goal is to impose a reasonable sentence, reasonable in light of the guidelines and in light of the 3553 factors. She elaborates on that a little bit more, and then when she imposes her ultimate sentence, she says, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she says, I find that you fall within the guidelines of the level 32, which she has subsequently said was incorrect, but that was her finding. But she says that, but the sentence I am imposing is a sentence I think that is reasonable. And that's very important because, again, while she thought, perhaps correctly, perhaps incorrectly, that the sentence was within that guideline range, she's very clear that she is imposing what she thinks is the reasonable sentence under the circumstances of his particular case. And what are some of those things that she found? She found that the offense was a staggeringly large, and that's a quote, offense, and that's at supplemental appendix, I believe, on 257. And on the same page, she notes that she doesn't see much contrition. She notes that she thinks that he would reoffend. And in so noting, she cites his extraordinary and impressive intelligence. I think that it is clear from the record, and I don't mean the record of the 2255, I mean the record of the sentence in itself, that the sentence she imposed was a reasonable sentence based on his particular factors as set forth both as she understood the guidelines at that time and the 3553A factors. So I don't think there is any prejudice in any case. Now, if I could address the issue of attorney error, Judge Barker found in the 2255 that trial counsel for Mr. Swanson did not intentionally waive or forfeit the 3B1.1 objection that he made in writing. Judge Barker makes clear in both her 2255 decision and again in the decision denying the bail relief that she misconstrued what trial counsel was answering a question to in the colloquy at that original sentencing.
What is everybody talking about? What are the parties talking about when this discussion about the role in the offense enhancement 3?
Your Honor, that's a good question that doesn't lend itself to a good answer, because they seem to be talking about two or three different things. They seem to be talking about which guidelines to apply, which guideline manual to apply. They seem to be discussing a two-level enhancement.
Right. What's the difference?
And the four-level. And the questioning going back and forth as to who is answering what question is really not particularly clear.
Right. Well, this happens from time to time. But what is the difference between the two versions of the guidelines that were under discussion with respect to this enhancement, the 3B1.1?
The earlier guideline was more favorable in that I believe it took them up more levels based upon the amount of money that was involved.
But with respect to the organizer or leader enhancement,
right,
was there a difference of consequence between the 98 and the 2001?
I don't think there was, Your Honor.
That's what I'm trying to focus on here, because there's a difference with respect to the loss computation, but not with respect to how 3B1.1 operates.
I think that's correct.
But the discussions got conflated, apparently. That's the best I can tell.
I think that questions were being asked and answered, and statements were being made somewhat at the same time, and a misunderstanding occurred. I will say, though, that what Mr. Voiles did, the trial counsel at that time, is very clear. He filed a written objection. He never withdrew that objection. The court never asked him, Mr. Voiles, are you withdrawing it, to which he answered. That was never asked. From his point of view, and from everything that anyone would know, that objection was off record and could have been raised on the original appeal. And perhaps it would have been prudent to have done so. But counsel for Mr. Swanson could not have known that Judge Barker thought that was withdrawn, because she never said that either. She did apply the four levels.
Right.
But Mr. Voiles interpreted it as overruling his objection, and it just went on.
So there's a four-level increase under 3B1.1 for the role in the offense under the 98 guidelines, and the same four-level increase.
Yes.
There's no change in the text in terms of what you have to show, you being the prosecutor, have to show to get that enhancement.
That is correct.
And so the only way this can be interpreted is as a continued factual objection to the application of the guideline and a misunderstanding about which question was being asked at the time.
I think that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
To conclude...
Counsel, could I ask
you?
I'm sorry. Counsel makes the argument that the two-point miscalculation in the revised sentencing at the 2255 hearing occurred. Do you agree that there was a miscalculation in the guideline range at the 2255 hearing? And if so, is that fatal?
What I think happened is this. At the trial court level, the United States argued that if the four-point level didn't apply under 3B1.1A, then a two-level ought to apply under 3B1.1C. And the court, Judge Barker, rejected that pretty firmly. But we had put that 30 level instead of 32 out, and I think that she was I think that's what she was referencing to. You're talking about, I think it's on page 27 or something like that of her decision. But it's where she's discussing that. And I think that's – so she does say a 30 level, but she sentences him at a 32, and if you take it down, the level – the guideline level that Mr. Theis says is the correct level. But I don't think that is material.
That's capped at 97 months.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so did she provide a sufficient explanation for – what is pretty significant upward variance?
I think she did. And I would address your attention to the special supplemental appendix at page 257 and 256, 257, in that area. I think she discussed it on 255 also. But she notes many of the factors, the harm that he caused, some of the personal attributes that she found particularly troublesome with that defendant, that she thought that he would reoffend, that he had no contrition whatever, the enormity of the offense, the amount of the loss. She goes through the whole a whole series of findings in that respect. My time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Tice, your time had expired, but I'll give you a minute to respond.
I want to clarify something Mr. Torres just said. He was asked whether the judge justified the 151-month sentence and referred to the second sentencing. And, of course, that was the justification for giving Mr. Swanson a sentence that the judge believed at that time was a within guidelines range sentence. And here today we should be looking to see whether the judge in denying 2255 relief gave an explanation for giving a 50% upward variance. And although the judge does make some reference to all the bad things that Swanson did, the judge certainly does not set out why there is no unjustified disparity that's created by this upward variance. And just to go back very briefly to Judge Tinder's questions about how Mr. Voiles got to 22, I went back and reviewed the calculations in his objection, and it's true that he gets to 22 by saying that there should be no adjustment for role in the offense, but all he does is repeat the same two sentences that appear earlier. So we're back at the same situation where he's got a little bit of paper on file. He says something to the judge that leads her in one direction and makes no effort to channel her to the sort of discussion that was had at the second sentencing, where she was very willing to listen to the parties and made findings of fact, which she did not do the first time.
The written objection says that the evidence did not reveal any other participants in the scheme alleged by the government.
Yes, it does.
What more is there to say?
To say to the judge, I would like you to make some rulings on who these participants were, because the government hadn't been clear about that. That was the sort of discourse that was missing in that hearing, and it happened in the second one.
Please, Judge, make your denial of my objection so good that it could never be reversed on appeal.
In a perfect world. Thank you, counsel. Case is taken under advisement.